This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro, and each night we're here to answer your questions.
This is Sophia in Colorado.
This is Kyle from Chicago.
I'm Alex. I'm calling from Oregon. Maybe this is too specific, but I'd appreciate advice.
We have a 10-week-old baby, and my mother is desperate to spend time holding him.
I'm honestly concerned about returning to work, given that our state has only freshly reopened.
What's being done for immigrants and asylum seekers in ICE detention facilities?
Wondering if it's safe to allow visitors into our Airbnb.
Is this a reasonable or a too risky idea?
Any advice you have is welcome. Thank you.
We have experts on hand tonight to offer solid facts, tell you what we know, and correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. This is our last week answering questions on the National Conversation, at least for the time being. So for the next few days, you can still send us your questions about the pandemic and the way we live now at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. Each night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? President Trump traveled to Fort McHenry National Monument in Baltimore to honor the fallen on Memorial Day. He also thanked current members of the military fighting the coronavirus.
Tens of thousands of service members and National Guardsmen are on the front lines of our war against this terrible virus.
The president did not wear a mask for his two public events today. Presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden did wear a mask as he laid a wreath at a war memorial in Delaware. It was the former vice president's first public appearance since March. Republicans say they will push ahead with their convention in person. Vice President Pence says they're open to moving the convention out of North Carolina.
If needs be, moving the national convention to a state that is farther along on reopening and can say with confidence that we can gather there.
Overseas, officials in Wuhan, China say they are nearly done testing every person in the city of 11 million. Testing began 2 weeks ago after more cases emerged. Wuhan was once the epicenter of the virus. The World Health Organization warned all countries to remain on high alert against the spread of the virus. Here's Maria Van Kerkhove with the WHO.
When the virus has an opportunity, it can transmit readily. We're seeing it in long-term care facilities. We've seen it in some hospitals. That means that the virus will take that opportunity to amplify if it can.
Globally, there are 5.5 million confirmed cases of COVID-19. We'll soon reach the point where 100,000 people will have died of the disease in the U.S., according to the official CDC data. That number can be tough to comprehend, and this scale of loss can be difficult to reckon with. Many of you have asked questions about the COVID-19 death toll, and we're going to take some time now to answer them. Dr. Helen Boucher is Chief of Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center in Boston. Thank you for joining us once again as we kick off our final week.
Thanks for having me back, Ari.
First, as an infectious disease expert, how do you view this death toll of 100,000 people? What does that tell us?
Well, I mean, I view it like everybody else with a sense of, extreme grief for the loss of life that we've seen, and with a real sense of urgency to continue all the measures that we're taking to fight this virus that is very much here in our presence.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to some questions that we've gotten from listeners. Here's one about statistics.
Hi, my name is Pete, and I'm an airline mechanic in South Carolina. I've been working, but I'm about to be furloughed June 15th due to the economy from the virus. I want to know, what's the median age? What's the mean age? Of the deaths that they're recording in the media, are they current or are they cumulative?
Dr. Boucher, we've been hearing from the beginning that elderly people are more at risk of death from this disease, though not exclusively at risk. Do we have good numbers on the age of the people who have died?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And we have a lot of numbers about the reported deaths, and what we know are the reported deaths. Mm-hmm. Again and again, whether it's in Wuhan, Europe, or the United States, we see much higher rates in older individuals, and that is certainly individuals above 65, but especially above 80. So that message is repeated again and again. It doesn't mean that nobody young gets sick or dies, but the vast majority who have trouble are much older.
Now, you made a point of distinguishing between reported deaths and the deaths that we might not know about, which segues into our next question from Steve in Raleigh, North Carolina, who writes, I'd love to hear about a particular coronavirus myth circulating on social media that the death count is purposely overinflated by counting almost everything as COVID without evidence. Can you look into what is and is not counted? He asks. Dr. Boucher, how do public health authorities determine what counts as a COVID-19 death?
Well, you know, we're fortunate in the United States that we have the CDC, and they give us pretty clear criteria to only report a death as related to COVID when we know that COVID played a role in the patient's death, whether it was underlying or the direct cause of death. So we have quite clear criteria. When we physicians fill out death certificates, we follow those criteria in reporting the cause of death.
And I think the second part of Steve's question is, how reliable are the death toll numbers? On All Things Considered today, we had a conversation about the fact that many researchers think the count is low. There's been a spike in pneumonia deaths that is hard to explain with anything other than the fact that many of these are uncounted COVID-19 deaths.
Well, that's a real concern, and I think most of us believe that the death counts that we have are an underestimate. So we believe that they are reliable, but they don't tell us the whole story.
Another listener is also curious about how states report their death tolls. Let's listen.
This is Kyle from Chicago. I've noticed that when states report their death counts, they often say that the real numbers are likely much higher. How do they know this, and how much higher do they think the numbers really are?
Dr. Boucher, do you have any insight into that?
Yes, Ari. I think as we were talking about, you know, we know about confirmed deaths, but we don't know about a number of unattended deaths, people who die at home or sadly in nursing homes, people who were never tested, people who have things like heart attacks and strokes that may well be related to COVID. So that's one issue. The other issue is that there is often a lag. So there's a lag between when the death certificate is filled out and when a postmortem exam is done or final tests come back. So that takes time. And then the death certificate itself has to be coded. And in the United States, that's done manually by people. So it takes a week or more for the actual death to be reported. So we see that lag affecting our counts as well. So there's a number of reasons that make us quite certain that this is an underestimate in deaths.
I mean, and do we have any guesses as to whether it's an underestimate by 2% or 20%? I mean,
you know, I think it's hard to say. There was some data a couple of weeks ago in the New York Times that showed 11,000 deaths probably related to COVID in a four-state area where there were kind of four hot states. But yeah. I think it's going to take us some time to really understand a better answer to your question.
Okay. This next question comes from Tim in Friday Harbor, Washington, who's been following the daily death numbers closely.
I've been looking at bar graphs of total new reported cases and new reported deaths in the U.S. Over the past month, it looks like there's a dip in cases and deaths every 7 or 8 days. What accounts for this pattern?
Huh. Have you noticed that, Dr. Boucher? Is that real?
Yeah, it's a great observation. So the deaths are reported every day, and there are things that affect the reporting, and sometimes it's even the day of the week. So epidemiologists actually rely on either a 3-day or a 7-day average to kind of balance out those blips up and down that are probably related to reporting and just the mechanics of reporting numbers.
All right. Our next question is from Emily in Eugene, Oregon. She's wondering about the mortality rate in China.
As the number of cases climb across the world, China's numbers for COVID-19 cases are hard to believe. Are there estimates of how many cases and deaths actually occurred there? It seems these numbers would be crucial in predicting what is to come in America and how to combat the pandemic.
We've heard the Trump administration criticizing China for what they say is false reporting of the numbers. Do epidemiologists have a clear picture of how many COVID-19 deaths there have been in China?
Well, what we know is what's reported is a number of 89,461 cases with 4,634 deaths. That's what's kind of publicly available in terms of the data. You know, I don't know more detail than that. And I think that what's really important for us is to learn the lessons from Wuhan about how they controlled the initial outbreak and things like testing and isolation and contact tracing so that we can apply those principles to our epidemic. You know, the actual numbers are interesting, but I think there's a lot we can learn from what we do know.
This next question from Sally in Santa Maria, California, is something that I've actually been wondering about myself. She writes, "We've been under stay-at-home orders here in California for 8 weeks now, but there are still new cases happening daily. Where are these cases coming from? Are they frontline people like doctors, nurses, and grocery store workers? Are they from groups of people confined, such as in nursing homes and prison? Are they people who are not staying home and social distancing?" Dr. Boucher, do we know what's accounting for the number of cases and deaths, even in places where there are strict lockdown orders and social distancing measures in place?
Yeah, this is one of the hardest things about this disease, Ari, because this is a brand new virus that no one's been exposed to before. We know that it happens in person-to-person spread, and I think all the examples you mentioned are likely. It's people who can't avoid interacting with other people, like having to go to the grocery store, having to be a frontline worker, having to take public transportation, living in close quarters. All the measures that we do have helped to flatten that curve and prevent us from being overwhelmed in the healthcare environment, but they can't completely stop the spread of this virus. We need to keep doing what we can to slow it, but until we have a vaccine, it's not likely to completely go away.
And so just briefly, as states do begin to open up, how long will it take until we know whether these reopenings are having an effect on the spread of the virus, whether there's another spike?
Yeah, it's one of the frustrating things is that the incubation period is 14 days, and then it takes, on average, a week or two before people are sick enough to come to medical attention. So that means it's 2 to 4 weeks from any change, like loosening physical distancing, before we're going to really get a sense.
Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center in Boston, thanks for answering these questions for us again.
Thank you.
And later this week, many Asian Americans report an uptick in verbal abuse and racist attacks during the pandemic. If this is something you've experienced, let us know on Twitter using the hashtag NPRConversation. This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.